This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
In 1973, the New York City Police Department created a hostage negotiation team.
It's not up against the gun. It's up against the man's mind.
When you're defusing a human bomb, it's the same as when you're taking apart a real bomb. If you skip a step, it's going to blow up right in your face.
Talk to Me tells the high-stakes true story of the world's first hostage negotiation team. It changed policing forever. Talk to Me.
Yeah, get it on, got to get on. Attorneys are going to mandate, get it on. And welcome to CarCast, Matt and Pearl. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. We got Mike Shank of Meyer Shank Racing coming in here. Won Daytona two times in a row now, or three times?
Two times in a row. And then Elio Castroneves, who's on his team, won three in a row, but he was on, I think it was with Penske or somebody before that. I forgot which team he was on. But yeah, two times in a row. So they're coming off of a very, very exciting start of the year.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. I mean, they're kind of the premier endurance race team right now, are they not?
It seems like they are. And they were out there with a new car, which I'm sure Mike can get into. You and I saw it. It's the new the Acura Hybrid that we saw in Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
They were walking us through that car and sort of the new design and the new aero and the hybrid drivetrain for the whole thing. And interesting that a new car like that did so well, so reliable, so fast.
Yeah, it's I don't know what they won by. You know, those endurance races sometimes crazily come down to the last lap, and then other times guys win by, you know, 14 minutes or 31 minutes or something.
Yeah, that's a good question. They were pretty dominant the entire race. I think they were on the pole to begin with. It was interesting. I watched, I think it was NBC Sports did like this great, like 45-50 minute like recap video of the entire 24 hours. And if you watch that, you get this wonderful overview of the whole thing. But also in this class that they run in, they won first in their class and overall.
The coverage of motorsports has really been kicked up several notches over the last few years. Like, you know, the coverage of other sports, football, basketball, baseball, it's sort of remained. They have a couple innovations. You know, it's definitely higher def, and there's a few more cameras, and they positioned a few cameras in a few places. But ostensibly, watching a football game, you know, watching the Super Bowl from the 70s, the 80s, or the 90s till now, it's essentially the same experience. Racing, NASCAR, all endurance sports, things like that. I mean, they got the cameras on the helmet. They got the cameras in the car. They got that nice aero thing, that tight aero thing when all the cars are bunched up, and it's got the names of the drivers and the arrows pointing to the cars and stuff. Like, they've done
some of them run the cameras off to the side, so when someone else is coming up behind you or close, you get their point of view and the car's point of view. The car's point of view. Like, it's interesting because we can make them so small and stream it all over like Wi-Fi or however they're doing it now. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was just for years just sort of watching the cars go in circles like you're up at the top of the bleachers, you know, just of the stadium or of the track, just watching them go around. And now they've pinpointed it, I should say. All right. Well, a big announcement. I'm going to be taking a little sabbatical from the show. I'm going to be taking a sabbatical from a few of my shows. Why? I'm really just trying to free up some time for myself. I got a bunch of projects going on. I've been sort of doing dozens of podcasts a week for over a decade.
Yeah.
And I realized...
And been on the road a lot.
I've been on the road a lot.
A lot.
Too. And between being on the road and just having this slate of podcasts, I'm going to trim some down. Now, doesn't mean they're not coming back. It doesn't mean they're not going to... You know, you can still listen to Shift and Steer and CarCast with Bill and Matt. You can listen. It'll be the same with Garagus, I think, doing Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with Gary. There'll be other forms of the show will come up. I'm just going to step back, try to free up my schedule a little bit, take care of some projects, pay some bills, go on the road, do all that, and then... God willing, there will be some reformation of this and some of the other podcasts coming sooner than later. But at this point, I don't know. Matt and I were kind of talking about it on the phone. I think of it as a TV series that has had its run, going to have a hiatus, and then probably come back in a slightly different form, a new season.
Yeah, yes. So we'll mix things up a little bit. But in the meantime, I'll work with Bill and the team here and come up with some new content ideas and some things like that. So we'll figure something out.
On an automotive note, it was crazy. First off, I've been driving big V8s in the city for years. And I kind of forgot about mileage.
Yeah.
I would just fill up these big V8s with these big tanks, and the gauge would say you're good for 400 miles, and I would drive for 400 miles, and 4 days later I'd be filling up again. So I turned in the Lincoln, big SUV, big heavy SUV.
Yeah.
V8, and I decided, well, before I get my next car, I'll just drive my daughter's little Mercedes around because, insanely, she got a car before she got a license, and it's just sitting around. So I'm like, that's a cute little Mercedes. And I don't know if it's the C-Class. It's the lower-end Mercedes.
Yeah, I think it's a C-Class.
But it's nice.
It's a couple years old.
Probably got a four-banger in it. I guess. I'm so out of it. I haven't, looked into what it has.
It wasn't new. It was,
but I don't know if it's a V6 or a four cylinder.
I don't know either. Honestly, I don't know either. I saw it once into the dark. I didn't even see what it was.
It's semi gutless, but I also realized my drive is just freeways and PCH, and I'm just sitting in traffic.
And it'll be perfect for Natalia.
Yeah,
right. It's modern enough. It's new enough. Safe enough. Not. Hard to handle, it's easy to drive.
So I'm driving, I'm putting on a lot of mileage these days because I'm going in between here and Malibu and back all the time.
Yeah, and airport.
I'm all over the place. And so I'm driving Natalia's car, and I get in, so I'm La Crescenta, drive over here, drive to Malibu. And I look down at the gauge. Here's how many miles you have left before you run out, and it's 329 or something. And I drive out here, I drive out to Malibu, I'm coming out here again, and I'm looking down at the gauge, it's 327, and I'm I've been driving the shit out of this car, and I'm in the same place, and I go, at some point, after going to Malibu and back two times, I'm this gauge is busted. I'm calling it a gauge, but the tripo meter that said I had 329 100 miles ago is now saying 327 or something on it. I'm like, this is insane. And I'm starting to freak out because now I think I'm on the freeway, but I think I'm on fumes because the gauge isn't moving or whatever.
Yeah. But you got to look at the gas gauge and you see it's still plenty
full.
Yeah,
but I do, but the gas gauge is just, that's digital. And I'm somehow thinking they're connected.
Okay.
And both of them aren't registering right. So I literally get off. I get off the exit. I go to the gas station. I'm like, this can't be right. I got to fill this thing up. And I go to fill it up, takes 5 gallons. And I'm like, oh, this thing's accurate. I'm driving this car all over. And by the way, it's, you know, it's not a Tercel. It's a Mercedes. It's not a Prius. It's just a four banger. But the fucking mileage isn't
insane. Your freeway miles, like you're just, it's not like you're doing 90 on the freeway. It's like with this traffic, you're just cruising at 60 in that sweet spot, mileage wise.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
The difference. And now, and then I was sort of like, oh, I get it. This is why people want this. And for me, even though gas is expensive in California, it was never really about money. It was about having to pull over and fill up like so often. So I get the high mileage cars, and also the horsepower. It's like, I don't know when I use it. Honestly, I'm just sort of driving up the 405 behind somebody and getting off on Sunset and following cars down to PCH. Yeah. Like, there's no place. I don't need it. It's completely unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, I when I drive a very low horsepower car, I notice it with my driving style. My left turn, you know, beating traffic, my, you know, merging into on the freeway, like I guess I'm a bit more aggressive, and I use that horsepower.
You know, you know what I think is going on as I just think about it. So like I'm like driving this little pea shooter all over the place. They're comfortable. It's fine. I haven't got the phone hooked into the Bluetooth yet, just because I'm an idiot. But anyway, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I know it doesn't have horsepower. I don't know. Where's Ben? Ben, what is a 2020 Mercedes C-Class have for a power plant? It's not pumping out a lot of horsepower.
Yeah.
I can tell. But when I get on it, it goes pretty good. And I was thinking to myself, now back in the day when you drive some four bang around that was down on horsepower and you'd punch it, this can't be right. 255.
Well, there's an AMG version.
Yeah, no, well.
So it's a 2 liter four cylinder that was two.
That sounds too much. 255.
No,
maybe 255.
Maybe it's got a little pep. That's
well. So maybe I'm shitting on my own point, but when I get into it, it goes like it goes. And back in the day, when you drive around a four banger, you'd punch it and be like, but you wouldn't really go anywhere, just kind of make a noise. And, you know, I realized we were talking about torque and horsepower and everything. I think it's gearing. I think this thing.
Turbo sizing and ECU programming and.
Yes, you know, all of that, but gearing too, because people used to drive around 3-4 speed automatics.
Right.
And so
now you get 8-10 speed.
You're going up, the grapevine and you punch it. It just doesn't do anything. It's like, it'll kick down a gear, but not real. I mean, it kicks down a gear, but doesn't really do anything. I think the transmission, all these 7, 8, 9, 10 to Chevy have a 10. I think all of that, of course, is making a much more linear power band and grabbing the right gear gets you going so much faster than it did back in the day.
Yeah.
That the same 200 horsepower was just felt much better with a 7-speed or an 8-speed. I think this thing probably has a 7-speed automatic.
Yeah.
Than it did with a 4-speed.
Yeah.
It's automatic.
The 4-speed, the 4 and the 5 for such a long time.
The million years of 4s and 5s.
I mean, conversely, I've been driving the exact opposite. I've been driving the Ford Raptor R, which is the V8 supercharged engine from the Shelby GT3 500.
Mm-hmm.
700 horsepower truck. And I needed to haul a bunch of stuff down to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Like a forklift, like a pallet. I hauled 1,100 pounds in the back of the truck down there. And with a 10-speed transmission, and it handles the weight fine, and it's comfortable, and it's, you know, and it's big, and it, you know, it's got all the nice stuff in it. I think I averaged about 11.9 miles per gallon on my little trip. And then around town, having fun with the truck and hitting it at the stoplights, probably about 7.9 miles per gallon. And I went to fill it up. And, you know, out here, they ding your credit card or something like that, or your ATM card, and they kind of cut you off after a certain amount. And I was pretty low on gas after the trip. You know, I don't know, it was like 20 or 30 mile range left on the on the computer that you were talking about. I put $125 into that fuel tank, and then before it
stopped,
cut me off, and three quarters of a tank. It holds 30 gallons. And I didn't get 30 gallons. It would every bit of $150 to fill that thing up.
Jesus Christ. And that's gas has gone down a $1.25.
Yeah. Now, I put the 91 octane because I didn't want to drive the supercharged truck and be like, I'm going to feed 87 and fuck up that engine. But
yeah.
or whatever. Plus, you wanted the power. But yeah.
Reminds me of the time. I think we're driving through Texas on our way back to the airport to drop off the rental car, and Mike wanted to fill it up at the gas station outside of the airport to not get dinged for the surcharge at the rental place. And he pulled over and he was filling up the car. It was, you know, 7:30 in the morning. We're catching our first flight out, blah, blah, blah. And Mike's like bitching and moaning, like, this is Texas. I thought gas was cheap here. Yeah. What the fuck? He's putting 93 in it or whatever. Like, it's a Toyota Camry.
Yeah, and like, it's a rental.
Mike, you're returning the car in eight blocks, and you just filled it up with high octane when this car doesn't even want high octane. You paid another $1.25 a gallon for it. Yeah. Seems like only yesterday.
Seems kind of like a Mike move.
Speaking of Mikes, we'll talk to Mike Schenck of Meyer Schenck Racing. Let me hit O'Reilly real quick. Love these guys. Always used O'Reilly. God, I think I used to use the one. There was one up on Foothill, even back in the day when I would rent a house in La Crescenta. I'd always be up there getting parts for my Zuzu Trooper or my first-gen Toyota Supra. It's O-Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts, and you can shop in-store or online. You can get points, rewards, and they'll send them straight to your phone or your inbox. You can get 2, 3, even 4 times bonus points on select purchases, and that'll go toward your next right to your account, so you get your next reward even faster. Receive a $5 reward for every 150 O-Rewards points, so you get it. You got some incentive to hit O'Reilly and get those points. And if you already have the O-Rewards, if you're already a member and you're not receiving your rewards, we'll just add your email, or your mobile phone number, and you get a $10 reward for updating your existing account. So you sign up. It's easy. It's quick at O'ReillyAuto.com, or you can do it in-store.
As we're waiting for Mike, a little off topic, not car related, but we'll bring Mike in. But we just launched our Drink Bravago website. We have our hard seltzer that you can go and try out. It's at drinkbravago.com. The podcast listeners could be the beta testers. Let me know how you like the product, the website, and any issues. Send us an email.
It's better than the White Claw. That much I will promise you. All right. So let's see.
Mike Schenck, how are you?
Mike Schenck has joined us, Mike.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good, good. Glad we're able to get together here.
Congratulations on the Daytona win.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a big big day for us. We all met at the debut of that car in, Monterey a few months ago. And it kicked ass immediately. So that's great.
How much did you guys win the race by?
3 seconds.
Oh, really?
God. Yeah, the top five cars were all in the lead lap, and none of us thought we would finish, to be honest with you. So
it is, you know, what people need to understand. It's been stated here on the show before, but, you know, when you talk to guys like Dan Gurney, and I've interviewed Dan Gurney, and you're talking about winning Le Mans, you know, 24-hour type endurance races. You had to drive the car in such a fashion that the car would last. You know, Gurney was talking about at the end of the Mulsanne straight, like not braking, just downshifting and letting the car kind of coast and having the Ferrari pass him every time. And you just couldn't drive a car at 10 tenths for 24 hours. Parts would break. You'd be out of the race. So it was a kind of a thing where a sprint was very intense because you're driving 10 tenths. But now we're taking that sprint intensity and spreading it over 24 hours, which has to be insane for everyone participating.
The stress level because of that is through the roof. And remember, this is the first year we've ever had hybrid power, electric, introduced to our gas engines, right? And we all had tons of issues in testing leading up to it. And the intensity of the push is unbelievable. I mean, it's, you know, I look at it as we pit, I think, 32 times, 32 pit stops. And in between everyone's just a little 55 minute sprint race. It's like, and you push as hard as you can. You have a gun to your throat. No room for, we didn't go to the garage one time. We had some problems, but we were able to fix it right on the pit lane. And I've done 18 of these in a row. We've won it three times. And it never is easier. It's always harder, to be honest with you, because of the competition.
There's a heck of a learning curve and rolling the dice on reliability when you're rolling out a new car like this. Not just a new car, but new technology with the hybrid powertrain as well. Why do you think it worked? I mean, you talked about testing it not really working, and it seemed to work. I watched a lot of the race, and it worked.
Well, you know, this is a motorsport show you're on right here. You guys are all motorheads, and I'll tell you, the motor that HPD Honda's racing arm built is a 2.4-liter V6. We shipped at 10,000. That motor is a little piece of artwork, and it's brand new. They dyno tested it extensively in Southern California there before we got our hands on it. I believe it's one of the leading reasons why we were so competitive with both Acuras. Acura finished 1-2 in that race. The car is built by a French company called Orica, and they did a hell of a job of aerodynamics and packaging. And our car is super light, which means we can put lead where we want for handling advantages, which is a big advantage. And there's just a right combination of right things. We never got to do a 24-hour test like Porsche did with Penske and BMW did. We never got to do that. So we literally just we got on pole. We were on pole, and we just took off. And we kept running. I don't know why, but we kept running.
Yeah, the lead, I'm guessing, is, I mean, just to sort of dumb it down for some of our listeners, you know, I'll make up a number, but each car cannot weigh more than 2,200 pounds. So right. Now, if you can get your chassis and your whole thing to come in at 2,100 pounds, then you're going to add 100 pounds of lead, but you're going to add the weight where you want it. And that's going to be a pretty big advantage.
Adam, think about on your Trans Am car. I mean, like that car's sensitive to weight placement, right? Like where you put it really changes how the car's balanced through all these corners, you know?
Absolutely. I wish I was good enough to figure that out. I do. What kind of gas mileage did you with the hybrid system? And that's a big part of it too in endurance racing. What did you average?
Well, so we picked up, in terms of, they call it energy now because we're very woke, okay? And so we call it energy consumption. Compared to last year, which is a pure gas engine, we could go approximately 20 to 25 minutes more on every stint. So the electricity helped. So in term, I mean, it was probably a mile to a mile and a half per gallon more because of the energy assist we had from electric. So it's not BS. It's not shit. It's real. It helps.
Well, you were saying that you're out there doing 55 minutes in between refuels.
Yeah. Yep.
So you didn't add to 55 minutes, but you added 20 or 25 minutes to the stint out there.
You were running 30 minute
refuels last time. Wow.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. 43 minutes, something like, if I'm being exact, but it extended it. It surprisingly extended it actually. So
Does the hybrid portion of this, was this just for fuel economy in the sense, does it do anything to the power? Or is it?
Yes.
It is.
So think about what we all refer to as turbo lag in any turbo motor. Almost anything you've driven, even a modern car, has some kind of lag down low, right? It's just an inherent inertia thing. When you're spinning turbos up, they take a second to get the power delivered. With hybrid power, we can take that electric, whatever, let's call it 50 horsepower of electric. We can add that in the power band anywhere we want. We're getting down in the dirt here, guys, but we can change how that power is delivered across the band, right? So we can make up that little bit of hole we have at low RPM. So, for example, Adam, you know the corner coming onto Long Beach Front Straight, that tight hairpin?
Oh, yeah. I've been cut off there many, many times by assholes dive bombing, even though it was explained explicitly. Do not dive bomb
not
on
the driver's
this
meeting.
Term. Find the line, get out clean, and you'll be going 8 miles an hour faster at the end of shoreline. But no, nobody listens. Yes.
Well, you can see that on YouTube. You get nailed, too. So that's good. We can fill that gap in when you come out of that real low first gear pole. We can fill that power in electric. So, yes, the electric is a useful tool for us and very relevant to our world. You know?
Where is the motor? Is it all-wheel drive or is the motor like on the transmission and it's still real-wheel drive?
When you say motor, you mean motor.
I mean the electric motor. Right. Yeah, not the right gas engine.
They call it the MGU. The hybrid unit is in the bell housing and it connects directly to the input shaft. So it's all rear-wheel addition.
Okay.
All rear wheel.
Because some of the street cars that we're seeing, you've driven as well, like the Acura NSX, we talk about having that gas engine turbocharged and, you know, kind of like off the line, those electric motors fill the gap. In the case of the NSX, there's electric motors powering the front wheels, gets that car moving, fills in that turbo lag gap. And when that engine catches up, it's hauling ass. So.
And I'm guessing the 2.4 V6 is a twin turbo.
Yes, twin turbo, 35 millimeter turbos.
Wow.
What kind of power does that engine make?
Well, I think they limit it. As per our rules, we have to be no more than 700 horsepower all combined, gas and electric. So we're at a little over 600, somewhere over 600 on gas. I'm guessing. They don't tell me these numbers. I'm not allowed to know. But I think at our, you know, Daytona, they turn us down because they don't want us going over 200 at Daytona. Mm-hmm. So they turn us back up when we go to Sebring a week and a half from now. So it's around 700 ideally.
Yeah, because Sebring's not, I mean, it's a airport. So you don't come off the bank and get slingshotted out onto it straight away. Well, speaking of endurance racing, Le Mans, what is it, the 100th year coming up this year?
Right, yeah.
Be a pretty good year to come back to Le Mans. Any thoughts on that?
Well, man, I tell you, we're not going to be able to make it this year in 23. None of the Honda or Acuras are, but we're certainly hoping to be there in 24 and 5. I was lucky enough to run that race as a team in 2016 in the second tier class called P2. So we were going for our class when we finished ninth there. What an incredible place to be. It really reminds me of Indianapolis, actually, the whole feeling of it. And it's where we all want to, you know, us winning three Rolex 24s is great, but we also want to add that to it. And with this car that we run, we can go for the overall win now, which is the big important thing for us.
And it looks like, I mean, you've got a hell of a team that I was almost positive you were going to make a run for Le Mans this year after that outing at Daytona with Elio, Simon, Tom, and Colin. I mean, that's a hell of a package. And, you know, what you guys did at Daytona, to repeat that at Le Mans would be fascinating.
It would be. It would be great. This car is so new. We didn't really know what we had. You'd had to plan for this a while ago if we were going. And we just, and corporately, Honda and Acura weren't ready to commit to it until we got a little more comfortable with the package, which I signed on to. I agreed with. It just happened to turn out we got a badass fast car.
With IndyCar gearing up to start again pretty soon, we got Elio and Simon Pagenaud and Ilya Castroneves. But you got to have some thoughts on Tom and Colin.
Well, listen, Tom Blomqvist is a guy that nobody knows, especially here in the U.S., really. Last year, you know, we won the championship with him, so he started creeping onto the map. We tested him in our IndyCar, actually, in October of 22, just as a thank you for doing a great job. He was incredibly fast in it. Going forward, it's possible we could definitely look at Tom coming to IndyCar. It's not done deal or anything, but and Colin now is brand new to me this year, and he's doing a great job. So we got a great combo there. And, of course, at Indy this year, I got two of the coolest veterans out there. And, you know, Elio, I mean, you think about what Elio has an opportunity to do to win five Indy 500s this year, and he is so good at Indy. At that speedway, he's got some mojo that is really unmistakable, and I love being a part, and we want to be a part of him winning fifth. That's never been done. That's Earth history, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to try to help him.
You know, and it should be stated that Elio and Simon are two of the nicest dudes you ever want to hang out with as well. I mean, it just helps.
Yeah.
When you have to spend a lot of time in a lot of intense situations with people, and these guys are just a couple of big black labs, you know, tails always wagging. They're not Chihuahuas. And Chihuahuas are fine when they're on your lap and you're watching TV. But yeah, when the shit goes down like it does in your sport because of the intensity and the longevity and everything else, it's just nice to have good dudes, right?
Elio is a gift for us from a corporate standpoint and all of our sponsors. I mean, literally, usually you just have to turn away and walk away from him. He just won't stop talking, right? Yeah. He just will not. Yeah. And I mean, he won Dancing with the Stars a few years. You know that, Adam.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And he's actually probably more known in households from that, to be honest. But he'll dance with you. I mean, he's one of those people that light up a room and you just hang on and get good stories. And he's got a ton. And we needed him. We're a young IndyCar team and we needed some experience. And he was absolutely the right fit for us. And it changed my life forever winning in the Indianapolis 500, you know.
I'm reading here that you joined Peter Gregg back in the day and did some endurance racing. But
I never drove.
You seem too young for that.
I'm a little too young for that, but I certainly know who he is and his legacy.
I think the note is winning three straight times.
Oh, joining Peter Gregg. Peter Perfect.
Yeah.
And winning. Oh, okay. All right. I guess you can interpret it that way.
Yeah, we've won three of them, and Elio has won three in a row, Rolex 24.
Yeah.
So now he's done four Indy 500s and three. I mean, this guy is... He's walking into the Tom Brady zone, right? Like in Mickelson zone. And, you know, like he really is in our world, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's past your Peter Greggs and even your Dan Gurney's. And
yeah.
What's Elio and Le Mans? Is there any history there? I mean,
he's never done it. He's dying to do it. You know, I think Elio's 48 this year. I think. And so, you know, he's feeling some pressure to get some things done here.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
He's driving for me at Sebring. So he'll join Colin and Tom in our car at Sebring.
I get to hang out with Simon every now and then. And I know Simon is similar, just like wants to be able to try things, wants to do Le Mans again at some point and just continue to be challenged and experiment a little, and he seems to be so happy with where he is with you guys right now because you guys give him an opportunity to do these things, and hey, you know, and win a Daytona 24 in the process.
Yeah,
he's won two now. Simon's won two in a row.
Yeah.
So I'm proud of that. You know,
yeah. If Elio ever gets a win at Le Mans, then that's it. He's the GOAT. There's no, I mean,
Adam, he's like an EGOT almost.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
I'm surprised you actually knew that one. That was fantastic. Yeah.
Who said he was going to get an EGOT? This is for Matt.
Yeah.
Because Matt loved Miami Vice when he was 14.
Oh, yeah. I love it now.
Yeah. The Tubbs or that guy.
Yeah.
He
announced he was going to get an EGOT because he had a TV show. He dropped a record. He announced that's the kiss of death.
Yeah.
Just let the EGOT come to you.
You can't announce it.
Do not announce.
You can't announce it. Okay.
You're going to get an EGOT. That is a sure sign you're not going to get one.
Well, Mike can announce it for him.
yeah, I don't want to hex him for sure.
Well, Elio, you know, you could arguably say he's the most successful driver ever now, but people may argue with you. I don't know, sure. But you get that Le Mans win, and there's no more arguments.
I would
agree. You know, he was also very, very close to doing the Daytona 500 this year. That almost happened.
Oh, really?
He backed out at the last minute, which was a good decision, I think, for him at the time. But, I mean, he's very aggressive. He's also doing that SRX series of Tony Stewart's.
That's
he
right.
does that in the summer in between stuff. And he does well on that. And that's dirt.
Yeah. And I just talked with Ron Capps about drag racing and how Tony Stewart is the new kid on the block, because Tony Stewart's going out in a Top Fuel dragster now.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's great for the sport and gets a lot of attention, and he's having a great time. But, you know, you're right. But Tony Stewart is another one that, you know, needs to be on the dirt and then on the pavement and now drag racing. But Capps said years ago, because he would race in the dirt with Tony Stewart for fun, charity events and all kinds of stuff. And Tony Stewart's like, I'm never getting in that drag race car. And he kept trying to get him in a car, and he's like, I'm never going to do it. And now he's doing it.
Ron's another nice guy,
by
the way.
He is a sweetheart of a guy. 29 years racing, and then he put together his own team and won a championship.
Is Sebring in a couple of weeks, you say?
It is. It's in 2 weeks. We tested there 2 weeks ago, you know, we hadn't had the car there, so we ran a couple days. That went really well. Our cars are just wicked fast around that place. And you know how bumpy it is. It's terrible.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You must have to do a lot of suspension and or chassis work when you go from a place like Daytona to Sebring.
Tons. Everything is different. So we're just, you know, trying to keep the car off the ground, get compliancy over the bumps. And turn 17 and turn one, or the last turn and the first turn, are the key to the whole lap. And they are really fast and really bumpy.
How much is it relying on data from the year before and the year before versus any changes in the track now?
It's all about the track hasn't changed a whole lot, to be honest with you. So we do take the data from before. We go to the 7-post shaker rig where we shake the car with different shock absorber settings and all kinds of things to try to find solutions for those incredible bumps they have. And they're different bumps. They're not bumps like at Long Beach, right? They're just totally different to themselves.
Now, what do you do when, like this year, they've repaved Monterey? Now you're going to go out and the data doesn't really help you that much, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. So we're going to take our best shot at it in simulation. So we do a lot of simulation stuff before we get there and bring the grip level up some and see what it does to our balance and then adjust from there. So we'll have setup A, B, and C and be ready to do. And then we'll be pre-fit that we can just swap them real quick in the pit lane and try a couple things. But you're right. Laguna got paved, and so did Road America got paved this year. So
is Laguna? Are they done with Laguna?
I don't know. Are they?
I was told they were. I was told.
Oh, really?
I mean, Monterey was rushed to get it ready for the season. In the off season, they needed to get a ton. But I don't know, between our weather and our rain and you know, between everything else. But is it more exciting to get on a fresh track like that? I mean, maybe as a team owner and as a driver, you have different opinions.
I feel it is a little exciting, actually, because you don't know, everybody's kind of reset. And so how good are you really? And quick in the real world, how quick can you adapt to this? We all know which direction it goes, and we know the elevation changes and all that, but I think it's a good exercise and you got to be prepared, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Because, you know, you're talking about, hey, where you go up and run Monterey, the historics again, what does a fresh track mean? Not just to you, but that dive bomber.
I was turning exquisitely slow times in my Datsun 510 last time we were there, but I was able to blame it on the track.
That's right. It needs to be repaved.
Now,
that's what we heard.
The 14 cars that finished ahead of me were on the same track, so that's tougher to explain, but I'm still sticking with my story,
right?
Which is I was told that track is slow. And it showed in my lap times on the Datsun 510.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking forward to going back there and checking it out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Also looking forward to Long Beach. Hoping to come by, say hi, catch up with you guys, and see everybody again. And maybe we could chat again as Long Beach gets a little bit closer. But that's always just a fun. I mean, they're already starting construction. I think they're 50 days out. And Jim McCallion's like, here we are, day one. getting everything ready, drifting, and the trophy trucks, and all the crazy stuff that they do out there. It's a hell of an event. Like what they put on for 2 weeks is
What's that? Middle of April, end of April.
It's usually April, mid April.
Mike Schenck, thanks so much for spending some time with us today, and good luck at Sebring.
Love to come and see your Paul Newman collection sometime, Adam.
Well, you'll come in for Long Beach, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, when you come in for Long Beach, just carve out a little time, and we're probably 45 minutes from Long Beach.
Yeah,
and,
we'd love to show you around.
Scoot on
love
by, and we'll give you a tour.
Love to see it. I appreciate you guys. Anything you need, let me know.
I appreciate it.
Let's make
so much,
it a date. Mike Schenck, Meyer Schenck Racing. Boys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That was fun and informative.
Yeah, but just a wonderful, dominant outing out there at Daytona. It was exciting to see that race. And
it won by 3 seconds?
But just an exciting race the whole time. And you're right. There was a point where they were having Simon pull back a little to conserve fuel. So they had him kind of give up the lead for a minute, and then they had to earn it back. And it was just a hell of a strategy.
I mean, I told you.
By that whole team.
Maybe a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, or I can't remember. But the 24 Hours of Daytona, I'm going to say 2 years ago, maybe three, I can't remember, like 2 years ago. It was down the last lap. There was a Ferrari, probably a 488 and a GT3 Porsche, just bumper to bumper, wheel to wheel, trading, scraping, running over rumble strips.
Yeah.
It was the last lap of the race, the 24-hour race. Like, it was 24 hours, and that was not enough to put, I don't think, a full second between the – and the thing that's kind of crazy is it was a Ferrari and a Porsche, two, very different cars from an architecture and design and everything standpoint. Like, maybe if it was two GT3s and they're exactly prepared the same or something. Nope, just the Ferrari and the Porsche. And I can't even remember which one won. I mean, they're like banging on each other. And it's like, oh, now there's a half lap. He's tucked inside. He's hung a wheel on the dirt. Like, it's the last rat. It was raced like a one lap sprint race.
Yeah.
It's insane.
The last lap of NASCAR, the Daytona race, was just a carnage fest.
Oh, who won that one? I didn't even see.
I'm having a blank right now.
All right,
I don't remember who, but it was exciting to see the end. I mean, it was a little uneventful because there were so many. They had to go into overtime. There's so many crashes, and it's just pileups and stuff. But interesting.
All right. Well, we will wrap it here. Again, you can keep on with Goldberg and Matt, and we'll keep you posted, and we'll keep doing car events and stuff like that, and keep it out there on social media and shooting it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm taking a little hiatus, but Matt's still the moderator. And you can go to AdamCarolla.com. There's live shows coming up. I'm coming to Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club in Vegas. I think that's March 9th, as I think. And then I'm coming all over the country. I was trying to figure out Sebring because I'm going to be in Naples, Florida, which I have no idea how far that is from Sebring. But I'm like, I'm going to be there. When is that?
Take Mike with you.
Just go
Take August.
You go to AdamCarolla.com for all that. What do you got, Matt?
Just a reminder, drinkbravago.com. Love for you guys to check it out.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Carolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
all month long on Pluto TV. Stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.